Your Eminence, Holy Abbot, Father Damien, and beloved brothers, Christ is risen. I would like to thank His Eminence Archbishop Dimitrios with all my heart for the invitation to come and speak at this great conference. I would also like to thank all of you for attending, and of course I do not really know what you would like to hear from me, and I believe it is very difficult for a speaker to present his message if he does not know the concerns and the expectations of his audience. And I would like you to forgive me if I somehow fail to measure up to your expectations. Because you know, our topic will center around Orthodoxy as a Hospital. I will divide this subject into two parts. The first part will be on the Catechism of the Orthodox Church, which I consider extremely important because the terms under which the Church receives a new member shows exactly what the Church expects from the new Christian and what the purpose of the Church is in the life of this new Christian. The second part, which will follow after a short break and discussion, will be the therapeutic quality of the Church, or simply put, the Church as a hospital. Towards the end, if time allows, we will also touch on the secularization of the Church in its theology and spirituality. As you probably realize, the first part is somewhat more theoretical, and the second part will be more practical. I believe it is helpful to look at the subject theoretically and practically, and when we do this, the subject becomes more clear and easy to grasp. And now we will take a look at the subject of catechism according to Orthodox tradition, which is bifold: how the Church accepts a new member, and at the same time, what is the method used to keep this catechumen an alive and active member and not one with a baptismal certificate. There's some people that believe that catechism is simply the theoretical knowledge of the truths of the faith which need to be understood intellectually. Although catechism possesses some of these elements, however, it is not limited to these. In reality, true catechism is an indoctrination, an initiation, if you will, in the mystery of the Church and the mystery of divine revelation. Please allow me to make some observations about man's condition before the fall. I strongly believe that in order for a teaching to be orthodox, it needs to examine man's condition before the fall and his condition after the fall. The Holy Scriptures tell us that man was created according to God's image and likeness. The image was granted to everyone. It was a given. However, the likeness, which is identified as theosis or deification, it is the element which man was called to reach for his personal struggle. So he had to be obedient to God. Man, right after his creation, was at the state of illumination or illumination of the nous, and he needed to reach the state of theosis, the ultimate union and communion with God. Saint John of Damascus describes this in his writings, and he says that paradise was sensible and noetic. In other words, Adam with his body lived in a most beautiful and divine place, and this is the sensible part, and his soul had communion with God, and this is the noetic part. Man was free of all evil, simple and bright from all the virtues, angel-like, king of all nature, earthly and celestial. This shows that Adam, immediately after creation, was at the state of illumination and was sustained and nourished by the theoria, or vision of God. He needed, however, to be tested, to detach himself from the relationship with the world and all the creatures to acquire a union with God, to acquire an unshakable relationship with God. Adam was an infant spiritually who needed to grow and safeguard the grace of God. When we're talking about an illumined noose, we need to keep in mind that St. John of Damascus makes a distinction between noose and reason. The noose is the nucleus of man's existence, the very eye of the soul, whereas reason is the means by which a person expresses his thoughts and his experiences. The noose of a man is what acquires the experience of God, while reason is the faculty by which a man comes to terms or reaches out to nature. We find this identical teaching in the writings of St. Nikitas Stithatos, a disciple of St. Simeon, the new theologian. He writes that the soul has the noose, which is its most pure part, and this noose is the father giving birth to the Logos, or the Word. He also repeats what St. John of Damascus says, that man immediately after his creation was at the state of illumination. His noose was illumined. In combining the passages of these two holy fathers, we can say that man's noose after the creation was at the state of illumination, which means that he had communion with God. He was practicing incessant noetic prayer, and this was man's natural state. Right after the fall, man suffered a distortion. The illumined noose became darkened, and in fact, the fall brought forth the darkening of the noose. We read in the book of Genesis that in paradise, there were two types of trees. One tree was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and the other tree was the tree of life. Adam disobeyed God and ate from the first tree, and by doing so, the path towards the tree of life was closed, and Adam was expelled from paradise while the cherubim guarded the gates of paradise leading to the tree of life. It is very important to ponder on the interpretation of the fathers about the theology of these two special trees of paradise. We must first see what St. Gregory the theologian says about this. In one of his talks, he says that God did not create the tree to be something evil, because right after creation, God saw that everything was good. Nor did he forbid men to eat from this tree out of envy. But this tree was good, and it would serve in man's deification or theosis if Adam would eat at the proper time and after the necessary preparation. This tree, according to St. Gregory the theologian, was the vision of God, which vision of God cannot be reached by men unless they prepare themselves, nor they can reach the vision of God autonomously by their own will or their own effort. We see this in one of the Troparia, in one of the church hymns, in the seventh ode of the canon of the Elevation of the Holy Cross, which was written by Cosmas the Melodist. This ode says that Adam ate from this tree at the improper time. St. Nicodemus the Hagarite interprets this. He works on this passage of St. Gregory the theologian and this Troparia, and he says that we can come to four different points. First, Adam, after his creation, was imperfect. Second, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil was also noetic and had a deeper meaning. Third, that Adam would eat from this tree at the proper time. And fourth, one should not eat from this tree while in an imperfect and infant spiritual state. The same thing happens in the sacrament of Holy Communion. For some people, Holy Communion becomes paradise, and some others drink unto judgment. In other words, it becomes hell for them when they are not properly prepared. Adam had to be solidified first in the state of illumination of his nous, so that he could progress to the tree of life, which would provide for him a certain stability. The fact that God took him out of paradise is an expression of his love and his great mercy, because Saint Nicodemus once again explains that if man would eat from the tree of life after the fall, he would remain immortal, and his disobedience and corruption would be eternally incurable. Let's see now how John of Damascus interprets these passages, and as we will see, he does so in accordance with Saint Gregory the Theologian. By the way, he reveres Saint Gregory as his spiritual father, even though they lived centuries apart, approximately 4 centuries apart. Saint John of Damascus writes that the tree of life was a test for Adam, testing his obedience to God. It was this tree which would enable him to open his eyes and acquire knowledge about nature and knowledge about God. And such knowledge would be good for those who reach perfection, but harmful for those who were not complete in their spirituality. We see the same result when solid food is given to someone who's in need of milk. The tree of life was exactly that, the power that gives life to those people who are worthy of life and are not subject to death. So the tree of knowledge of good and evil is the first level of the theoria, or vision of God, which is a preparatory stage to prepare a person to eat from the tree of life, which is a more perfect vision of God, which is the deification of men. It is very significant that Saint Nikitas Stithatos also touches on these points, who is a disciple of Saint Simeon, the new theologian, in his treatise on paradise. Saint Nikitas Stithatos approaches this subject under three perspectives: the cosmological, anthropological, and the ascetic one. I will not attempt to analyze these different perspectives at this point. I will only deal with the ascetic one. Saint Nikitas Stithatos says that paradise is the domain of practical philosophy, meaning the purification of the heart. The tree of knowledge, of the knowledge of good and evil, is the natural theoria, and the tree of life is the mystical theology. Through the natural vision, we acquire the knowledge of all existing natural things, and through mystical theology, we acquire the knowledge that results from our union with God. It is the knowledge that man is able to acquire about the Holy Trinity and the incarnation of the Word of God. So God placed man in paradise, which is the practical philosophy, to be purified more. And being at the state of illumination, he had to progress to mystical vision. And this he had to do by being obedient to God. This is the exact path that every Christian must take. According to Saint Nikitas Stithatos, this is the very point that separates the Orthodox and the Church from the heretical bodies. I'm going to repeat this again. This is the very point that separates the Orthodox and the Church Fathers from the heretics. The heretics taste the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil without purifying the heart, and this is why they miss their mark as far as the faith is concerned, and they fall into terrible falsehoods. On the other hand, the Church Fathers, after purifying their heart, they reach the level of practical theoria, or vision of God, and then they progress to mystical theology. They acquired divine life, and they gave it to us so it can be fed eternally. So we can conclude from all this that Adam, before the fall, was at the state of illumination of the nous. After the disobedience, his nous was darkened, and his whole personality, along with the energies of his soul, were distorted. Since man is the center of all creation, creation itself fell into the similar darkness, and now cure was needed. Man needs to purify his heart to reach the state of Adam before the fall, to become illumined once again, and then to progress to the state of mystical theology, which is the perfect communion and union with God. Now, what the first Adam failed to accomplish was accomplished by the second Adam, Christ. And Christ became the second father of the human race. Christ is the only healthy person from a human point of view. St. Maximus the Confessor says that there are four elements that makes men have a darkened and impure nous. The first one is for men to have false knowledge or to be confused in matters of God. The second is to be ignorant of divine matters. The third, to have impassionate or sinful thoughts, logismi. The fourth, to consent to sin. The man who has an impure mind is actually cut off from God. He is not capable, he's not in a position to know what God wants from him, and he cannot discern God's will from other wills. In all the fathers of the church, the truth is shown that there are three stages of perfection. The first one is the praxis, which is the purification of the heart, the purification of the heart from the passions. The second one is the illumination of the nous, which is manifested through the incessant noetic prayer. And third, the theoria, or vision of God, when someone becomes worthy by the grace of God to see God as light. St. Maximus the Confessor, as we said earlier, names these three stages practical philosophy, natural theoria, and mystical theology. St. Gregory Palamas, along with St. Simeon the New Theologian, talk about practical chapters, natural chapters, and theological chapters. The nous of men must be freed from wandering around natural and mundane things, must be focused inside the place of the heart. In other words, to be freed from pleasure and pain, and consequently from the ignorance and forgetfulness of God. And in this way, he can acquire the knowledge of God, and one can attain this state in the church and through Christ by participating in the sacramental life of the church, and by living the ascetical life of the gospel. Holy baptism is also called illumination because man's nous becomes illumined, reaching the state of Adam before the fall. However, baptism should be preceded by proper catechism, which is not limited to some simple theoretical teaching, but mainly man's struggle to purify his heart from passions. This is precisely what we call cure in the Orthodox tradition. It is not a matter of a psychological balance, but men struggle to acquire union with God. This is what therapy is all about, and this is precisely what we call ascetical life. Saint Simeon the New Theologian, once again, identifies therapy of the soul, with instruction. In other words, true Orthodox instruction equals therapy. This clearly demonstrates how catechism was perceived and carried out in the ancient church and how man's cure took place. Christ received his disciples for 3 years, and they followed him after they abandoned all their belongings and their former life, and in this manner they purified themselves. This is why Christ, right before his passion, told them, "Now you're already pure because of the word that you heard from me. You're already pure because of the word that I gave to you." And on the day of Pentecost, he gave them his Holy Spirit, and they became members of his body. If one studies carefully the canons of the local and ecumenical synods, we'll soon realize that in the ancient church, there was a class of catechumens who were preparing themselves for a considerable period of time in order to be baptized. From this, we can conclude that there was a sizable class of people under therapy or in the process of purification. A certain canon of the Second Ecumenical Council is of great interest to us because it shows exactly how catechism took place. It states that the first day we make them Christians, the second day we make them catechumens, the third day we read the exorcisms, and after this we instruct them to remain in the church a long period of time to listen and study the Holy Scriptures, and after all this, then we baptize them. So the person who wished to be baptized was called a Christian on the first day. This shows that a specific prayer was read in order for the catechism to begin. Father John Romanidis suspects that the prayer that was read to receive a catechumen is the same prayer that we read today to a child on the eighth day after its birth. What is significant, however, is that someone was called a Christian first, and then he would undergo catechism. This shows that after the reading of this prayer, his name would be enrolled in specific catalogs of Christians, and the struggle against the devil and the passions would begin. Saint Cyril of Jerusalem, speaking about the illumined who are about to become baptized, states the following: "Your name has been enrolled now, and you have been called to become soldiers in the army of Christ." So after this enrollment, the therapeutic treatment would start to prepare them for holy baptism. From the third day, the exorcisms were being read. These are the specific prayers which expel the demons from the heart of men. Now, we're not talking about demon possession here, where the demons possess the center of men's reason, but about the catechumens who are enslaved to a multitude of passions and evil desires. According to the tradition of our church, these passions are the consequence of the energy of the demons. In the Travels of Etheria, an ancient text which was written by a nun who visited Jerusalem and recorded her experiences, we read, "Here in Jerusalem, priests read the prayer of exorcism to those who are about to be baptized. And this happens many days before their baptism, and they do this daily. It seems that these prayers or exorcisms are the same prayers that we read to this day during the service of the catechumens." And this service of the catechumens precedes the service of holy baptism. Along with the exorcisms, instruction of the truths of the faith would take place as well. Again, catechism was not limited to prayers and some theoretical teaching alone, but it was connected to the liturgical life of the church as well. The catechumens had to be involved in the liturgical life of the church so they could pray to God and to have the faithful pray for them as well. So in the liturgy of the catechumens, there are special prayers for the catechumens, just like there are special prayers for the faithful or the baptized. This is very important because a theoretical teaching is not enough, but prayer is essential and necessary so God can send His grace. And after this very lengthy process, which would last up to 3 years, the bishop would schedule the date for holy baptism. As we can see from what we've discussed thus far, the church was preparing the members extremely well. This is also very clear in the catechisms of St. Cyril of Jerusalem. He was telling them that this period was a period of repentance and confession of their sins, to follow the theoretical teachings of the faith and also accept the beneficial prayers of exorcism, and consequently to struggle to purify their heart from the passions. So it is clear that the catechism of the church is not limited to some theoretical teaching, but it is man's attempt to enter the mystery of divine revelation. This takes place by the grace of God and man's personal struggle. This is exactly what we call therapy of men. Men must be purified internally to reach noetic prayer and thus obtain the knowledge of God. When we talk about the knowledge of God within the Orthodox tradition, we are not referring to theoretical intellectual knowledge, but we mean the existential and empirical knowledge. In summarizing these thoughts, we can conclude A, that the knowledge of God is existential and empirical, practical. Christianity is not some sort of ideology or morality, but it is the path that leads men to the knowledge of God, knowledge by experience, that is. B, the acquisition of these three stages of spiritual perfection, cleansing, illumination, and theosis, can be accomplished through the sacraments and ascetic life. The concept of sacraments and Holy Communion outside of the ascetic climate of the church is inexistent. This is clearly the prerequisite of the ascetical life and ecclesiology and Eucharistiology outside of the ascetic perspective become meaningless and problematic. C, the organization of the church, and especially the parish, which is the nucleus of the life of the church, can take place through these presuppositions. If someone studies carefully the epistles of St. Paul, one realizes that in those churches, there were Christians who belonged to all these stages of spiritual perfection. D, catechism that takes place after baptism for adults and children should be understood within this framework. We should present to the young children the lives of the saints of the New and Old Testament, but also take time to analyze their theology and the theology of their personalities. We should present to them the lives of the saints from an Orthodox perspective. In other words, we should analyze to them how did they acquire holiness, and what exactly is this holiness, and what is the knowledge of God that made them die or suffer a martyr for Christ. To the older children, we can begin to emphasize some of the elements of the truth in simple words to assist them in the purification and cure of their hearts from the passions. They also need to know how they can become free from guilt and overcome the problem of death or the fear associated with death. This is very important because if we probe into these things carefully, we will realize that drugs, AIDS, rebellions, and many other problems that society faces and deals with today are related to this inner uncertainty and anxiety. These evils of society are related to the guilt that the children feel about the dilemma of death and the absence of purpose in their life. We must also stress that all the Christians today, even those who are baptized while young, should be shepherded under these guidelines. I believe very strongly that we need to see catechism under these perspectives so it can help the contemporary men effectively who seeks and searches for the truth and the life. Man today is exhausted from many external activities and artificial pleasures, and he searches for fulfillment in his life. Now, if a man comes to modern-day orthodoxy, and he comes across a papist or Protestant way of view, or a watered-down orthodoxy, or if he finds a mentality similar to the Eastern religions, then his disappointment will be immense. Orthodoxy today must give essential and concrete answers to the existential problems that plague today's men. We must face all these problems under the perspective of Orthodox theology as designated by the Church Fathers. The Orthodox Church has a totally different content as compared to the content offered by other persuasions and religions. For example, our Church has a totally different idea and a different meaning about therapy and cure of the human soul compared to the idea of cure as seen by other faiths. In other words, Protestant denominations may talk about cure and healing. The Oriental men, the Buddhists, may talk about cure, but the meaning is different. The psychologist can talk about cure, but under a totally different perspective. This is why the Orthodox Church does not exhaust itself to a moral or external or superficial level, but it enters the ontological level when dealing with the subject of therapy. Now, if we, the Orthodox clergy, do not have a clear idea what therapy or what sickness is, what sickness of the soul is all about, then we create confusion. We go on confusing the lady. We confuse the people of God. This is an important issue, and we will touch more on this on the second part of our presentation after our question and answer session. I would like to stop here, and I trust that some food of thought given. You may want to bring up some questions or any other concerns at this point pertaining to this subject. And now we will proceed with the first question, which goes like this. If I understand your presentation correctly, one of the mistakes that we can make here in the Western world is to think that fasting and general ascetic activity is something separate from the knowledge that we have as Christians. And instead of understanding them as bound together with the life of the church, here in the West, the perception is that this is merely something traditional with a small t and not necessarily connected with the life of the church. I must thank you very much for these questions because it gives us the opportunity to address some important issues. Many times we talk about the West and our mind goes to America or Europe, and we may be ignorant of the fact that the West can exist in the area of the East. It is certainly true that by East or West, we mean the way of life and not the geographical area. Western lifestyle is for someone to step down, descend, and remain in the lowest of levels of spiritual existence, to remain on the surface and to fail to enter into the depths of the heart, to be content and dissatisfied from the things of the world and from the external stimuli of nature, to live only the life of the senses and be satisfied with the sensory way of life while expelling God from his life. I believe this mentality can be found in all countries in the entire world today, East or West. And it is possible for someone to be truly searching for, in the West, searching for the pure Eastern way of life, while someone in Greece, let's say, can have a very Western mentality. This Western mentality can be seen in the area of fasting and asceticism especially. For instance, when someone says that prayer is not needed, being that he can handle all his affairs on his own, when he feels that he does not need God in his life, or when he decides that there is no value in fasting, so he does not practice it, or he's not willing to be obedient to the church. This shows a Western mentality. The inability to use the proven method of the Orthodox piety and Orthodox tradition, the inability to submit, characterizes Western mentality. Fasting and prayer are indispensable in this process of man's therapy. Generally speaking, when someone does not have the ability to fast, it shows that he bases his entire existence on material things or on matter provided by nature. He wants to satisfy his passions. His mind is attached to matter and not God. His mind is attracted to the creation and not the creator. The very same thing happens when someone does not want to pray. It clearly means that his nous is darkened. He feels that prayer is a waste of time. These attitudes are some examples that demonstrate a Western way of life or a Western mindset. And now we get to the next question, which goes like this. You mentioned something about teaching the older children, about teaching them the lives of the saints and the problems of society today, how to overcome their fears of death. Can you expand on that? Because here in America, we see nihilism, Nietzscheism running rampant. And in this young culture, we see many children committing suicide and losing way. Can you expand somewhat? Death is an existential fact, and not simply something that ends our biological life. But it is a fact that we feel that we carry with us from the beginning of our existence. When we speak about death, we mean this mortality and corruption that we have within us from the day of our conception. From that very moment, we are destined to die. Disease and corruption shows the presence of death within our being. A Swiss psychologist, Duyase, has done extensive studies in this area and has shown that a child at the age of 7 to 11 years of age realizes for the first time that death is an irreversible matter. Up to that age, a child does not have a clear knowledge about the existence of death. This is why the problems begin after these ages. What is death, and why did grandfather die, and why we have to die? And during his teenage years, these existential problems increase even more. The teenager tries to come up with answers as to what is death, what is life, why do I exist, why do my friends die, why do people die in wars, what exactly happens when the soul leaves the body, why didn't my parents ask me if I wanted to be born before they went ahead and had me? All these things need to be addressed. Now, if society in general and the education system does not offer concrete answers, the child is left at a state of confusion and imbalance. He cannot come to terms with these existential problems, and this is the reason of drug abuse, substance abuse, rebellion. Now, when the church fails to address these issues about life and death and eternity, it becomes much worse. The teenager is searching to find a meaning in his life. A bigger and higher meaning than what their senses offer to them. Again, when teenagers fail to find this meaning through their families, their church, or their community, then they end up very troubled. We must deal with this precise dilemma and show the children that Christ is victorious over death. and someone must live this victory in his personal life. Christ destroyed death by death. I can overcome the passions and the death that lurks in my existence. We mentioned earlier that we should not limit our Sunday school teachings to social ethics and morality, but we should proceed to delve into ontology. The grassroots of these problems, the depth of our being. A high school teacher in Athens tells me that when he talks to the children about Orthodox psychotherapy, they become extremely enthused. This is the very thing that they are seeking and search for. And we continue now with another question. What is the role of Western psychology for the Orthodox, since psychology has a different view about the origin of men, about anthropology and psychotherapy? And can there be such a role between psychology and an Orthodox believer? It's the first part of the question. And the second part, how do we confront the new findings of medical science concerning the biochemical basis of chemical disorders? We as Orthodox try to see the depth of the problem, the ontological problem, and there's a vast difference on how Western psychology views illness and how Orthodoxy looks at this illness. In a final analysis, illness is not the lack of balance, but the lack of our relationship with God. In Orthodox theology, illness is the radical change, a change that took place after the fall, and this radical change of man's nature causes illness. We certainly agree on the existence of spiritual, psychological, and neurological problems and disorders, and when man leaves God, then he's plagued by a number of disorders. His nerves are affected along with his entire psychological state. We do have cases, however, where a man is close to God, has grace and prayer, lives spiritually, but due to bodily or physical dysfunctions, this man can be infected and in need of cure, need of a doctor. Again, a spiritual man, one who has the grace of the Holy Spirit, can distinguish when a disorder is physiological, caused by various bodily ailments, or when a problem is caused by sin and guilt, and when a problem is caused by the actions of demons. Many people that work in the area of psychiatry and psychology, in the pursuit of psychotherapy, they do not differentiate between these different causes and treat every illness alike. I remember a recent Hagarite Holy Father who slept in the Lord a few years ago saying, "This child needs to go see a saint," or "This child needs to go see a doctor." In a final analysis, a true Orthodox theologian, according to Father John Romanidis, is one who can discern clearly between negative energies that are the work of the devil, energies from the Spirit of God, and natural states of the body.